Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio in Cumming, Georgia, it's time for FOCO Talks, brought to you by the Forsyth County Chamber of Commerce.
Well, hello, hello. This is James McCoy. I'm the president and CEO of the Forsyth County Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for listening in today. We have a really, really exciting topic to talk about today with two of the most important decision makers on transportation in the state of Georgia. Our guests today are Senator Greg Dolezal, who is chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, and Representative Rick Jaspers, who is chair of the House Transportation Committee. And we are very proud that both are members of the Forsyth County Legislative Delegation. And thank you, gentlemen, both for being here. I am also joined today, for the first time, joining me as a co-host, Jason Bodwell. Jason is with Jacobs Engineering, longtime chamber member and a strong advocate of transportation in the chamber and in the community, and I've been working with Jason for a number of years now. Jason, thank you for joining us and being willing to be a co-host today, so thank you.
Thanks, James.
Very good. All right. Well, let's jump right in. We've got a number of areas to cover and talk about, and I'll get us kicked off. And I'd mentioned a moment ago, Senator Dolezal, who is the chair of transportation. He is also the vice chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee and was elected in 2018, correct? Your district, Greg, sir, really is all of Forsyth County or most of Forsyth County. And do you cover other counties as well or just Forsyth?
Just Forsyth County.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for being on today. And Representative Jaspers, thank you. You are new to our legislative delegation, relatively new to our legislative delegation, but you were elected in 2010, correct?
Yes, sir.
And chair of transportation. Of course, you both serve on many other committees. But what part of Forsyth County do you represent?
I would say is the northwest part, and all of Pickens and the northeast part of Cherokee. So I got kind of a 57-mile long district. It covers a lot of three counties, but I'm very fortunate. It's probably the most dynamic, actively growing part of Georgia, and it's a lot of fun to represent this area.
Awesome. Very good. All right. Well, let's jump in. So transportation is of course, a huge investment for Georgia and for Forsyth County, as it is any municipality. And, there's so many different entities involved with transportation, on a local level, on a state level, certainly on a federal level. But within Georgia, talk a little bit about kind of the role of the legislature and your committees as that relates to the Georgia Department of Transportation. Of course, on top of that, we also have all these different transit entities around Georgia. But, whoever would like to take it on, I'd love to hear from both of you. Who would like to take it on first?
Well, Greg, go ahead and start.
Sure. Thanks for having us, James. It is really good to be here. So the Transportation Committee, most people probably think of it in terms of roads and bridges, and I'll let Rick maybe talk about some of that, but we also dive into areas such as rail. We obviously have the third largest port, the Port of Savannah here in the state of Georgia. I was over there on Monday for a different committee meeting and driving to and from there on I-16. I'm pretty sure that every tractor trailer was pulling a container, either pulling a full container out of the port or an empty container back to the port. So we have to think about the future of that infrastructure need as well. We work very closely with GDOT in terms of policies. We don't get into the nitty-gritty of road planning. There's a number of professional staff that deal with what roads are going to be widened and when, but we do work on the appropriation side as well, making sure that those budgets are where they need to be to fulfill the needs of the citizens of the state.
Pretty good.
Yeah, and I'll just add, just echo a little bit what Greg said, but it's the most popular committee to be on in the House or the Senate because it touches everybody's lives. I mean, when I was thinking about this morning, our role, Greg and I, is really twofold. It's the appropriators, the billions of dollars that move through the state budget come through us, especially as it relates to transportation, but also policy. And I think there'll be some big policy issues that are coming forward in the next few years where, you know, we get to get a room, and my committee has 43 different people on it, to come up with appropriate policy decisions that reflect what Georgians want. And that's all Georgians, not just one in one little area, but here and there.
Yeah.
But it makes it difficult. It's probably one of the most challenging committees because everybody has a stake in it.
Right.
Everybody drives on a road. Everybody sits in a traffic signal, stuck sometime. But we hear about it a lot. But just like Greg said, you know, but here in Georgia, we're in the best position. I mean, you know, I've been all over. You know, I was in South Carolina a bunch last week. You just drive down the roads in Georgia and then drive over into Columbia, South Carolina. You will praise Georgia roads, but also our airports. You know, we have the biggest airport system. We have the rail that covers this, that feeds the East Coast through Georgia. And so he and I get to work on policy and funding to make sure that that works better. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, you know, Greg said, you know, we don't decide what roads are paved, but we have got the best partner that there is in the Georgia Department of Transportation in helping us do that and facilitating it. And people like Jacobs Engineering, the professional sides of what we do, hitting all cylinders in Georgia the best we can to make it a better place to work. You know, because, you know, here in Forsyth County, we're in a great community. I mean, it's a safe community. I tell people that, best schools. But there's a lot going on, and transportation is a big issue here.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and you know, as Georgia continues to be, you know, the number one state to do business, and we continue to be one of the fastest growing states in the country. It's going to, you know, it is a critical part of that plan and how that works.
And I want to throw out too, you know, we didn't even talk about all the different people that come to see Senator Dolezal and Representative Jaspers.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about an alphabet soup of organizations. I kind of just took a minute. Greg, you can add them too. The ATL, MARTA, various county transportation works, the ARC, GTA, the regional transportation groups, railroads are aligned at our two offices to make sure that all those groups, that we understand their policies and what we do doesn't hurt them. Mm-hmm. We help them and make sure Georgia works better. But I think the hardest part for me, especially when I took this job a couple of years ago, was trying to get my arms around all these different groups. And, you know, what did they want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how did it fit into what we might want to do in Forsyth County or in Atlanta or on the coast where we have a lot of transportation issues?
Perfect. Great. Jason?
Thanks, James. So, gentlemen, we're quickly approaching the next legislative session in January. I know you guys are excited. Get to roll up your sleeves and go downtown and see your friends and accomplish some great things. So as the second year of the legislative cycle, what are you hoping to accomplish in your transportation committees? What's your top priority or top priorities in those related transportation committees?
Well, I'll start off this. Yeah, I thought about this a little bit. Still a little early, you know, especially in this. But I'll tell you right now, I think the biggest issue facing Georgia in transportation is funding. You know, it's going to take a minute to explain it, but just think of all the economic development projects that we've had across the state. We've had some fabulous ones. I mean, absolutely changed the face of Georgia manufacturing is with the EVs, the battery plants, the solar cell plants. But what that has done is it caused us to spend a lot of money on transportation projects in those areas. Well, you know, we were kidding a moment ago about money, not printing money. Money in Georgia comes from somewhere. We have a balanced budget. Greg and I are very serious about, you know, spending. And so that money came out of the transportation budget. And so what that did is that kicked a project that may be in some small county in Georgia down the road. When you take $300 million out, things get moved down. I think our number one goal is to make sure that, you know, when we're doing the budget with budget surplus that we have, that we make sure that money's backfilled in there so that a project that's in Forsyth County or Hall County or wherever, whatever Schley County gets the appropriate focus it needs. And I think that's my number one thing. And gosh, I had a whole list of things, you know, because I get all these people calling me as Greg does, hey, Rick, I need you to work on this. You know, that happens a lot, but you know, we're working very hard on the funding side of it to make sure that Georgia continues to meet the needs of the people. And do you have any other, Greg?
I think one of the things that's been the most interesting for me, and Rick has been at this longer than I have in terms of chairmanship of the committee, but this year, you know, we had a tort reform bill in our committee. We had a bill that dealt with how far off of shore you could be with making a wake with a wakeboard boat or a surf boat. As we had a truck weight bill that was probably that literally came down to the wire on the very last day of session in the process of trying to get that bill right, which I think we did get it right. It's just a few years. We did a, that's a sunsetting bill that will expire. So we're, truck weights will be with something will be something that we deal with again. I'm just going to underscore what Rick said. I think that the funding question is the primary question for anybody who thinks about infrastructure in the state. I mentioned the port earlier. There's a whole freight and logistics study that happened in the state that identified a approximately $3 to $4 billion a year hole that we would have to fill if we want to fund what we need to fund to keep up with the growth in the state as it relates to infrastructure. To put a couple of just round numbers on things, we spend about $3 billion a year of state money in what we call the program, and that's just building roads and bridges. What Rick was referencing is these ECD projects, these economic development projects, last year took out about $450 million from the program. So you took away about 15% of the other projects that were going to happen somewhere in the state of Georgia. And $3 billion sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money. But it sounds like a little bit less when you realize that the 400-285 interchange costs $1 billion. That to widen Post Road is going to cost $110 million. And Post Road is 1 6.5-mile road in one of the 159 counties in the state of Georgia. And there's a Post Road probably in every county that every that's the most important project of what needs to get widened. So we've seen a number of states do a couple of different things. We've seen states either use some of their surplus money, and Georgia's going to have between a $4 and $5 billion surplus. We've seen them dedicate some of that surplus funding to infrastructure. We have also seen other states dedicate ARPA funding to the tunes of multiple billions of dollars to infrastructure, and that may be something that we can do. But I think that, and I know that one thing that Rick and I have talked about are what are the long-term funding solutions to ensure that we have a sustainable funding path for transportation. And we have some ideas for that. There's a tax called the Marketplace Facilitator Tax that is essentially a tax on internet goods. So think of it as a Amazon tax. That's an existing revenue stream that in a surplus environment, I think that we probably maybe have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to dedicate some of that funding into the program and shore up what may be eventually a dwindling revenue stream in the gas tax.
And I just want to add one thing. You know, and I think Greg and I and the leadership of other people who are in transportation talk about a lot, is making sure that the other, in my side, 180 members and his 56 members, maintain a vision that, you know, and I think that's my goal many times as a cheerleader in on that committee, that we're making sure that our members understand that we have to have a vision down the road beyond your service. That what we might be talking about today is 10 years from now, 20 years from now. But we've got to work very diligently and thoughtfully about doing that. And I think I find that's my hardest thing with a lot of members is continually to trying to do that. It's come up with a vision and make sure that even if we don't agree on it, that let's think down the road how these things work and how they fit into our state.
Can I piggyback on that really quick? Because sure. I had a company in my office last week. It was the second company that came to me. This company was Archer, and they're building a significant manufacturing plant here in the state to make basically air taxis. So they're going to have 4-passenger drones. They have prototypes going through FAA testing right now, vertical takeoff, horizontal flight, vertical landing, fly from North Point Mall to Atlanta Hartsfield Jackson Airport for $75. That's their value prop. 12-minute charging on a round trip, so they will plug into essentially glorified EV chargers and charge their drones. They'll be piloted drones. They'll be manned aircraft. They'll charge those enough to do a round trip, and they'll charge them in about 12 minutes. So that opens up all sorts of regulatory questions. Do you have a vertiport authority that begins to look at regulation of vertiports around the state, or do you allow the free market to essentially land these things where they want to within the guidelines and the rules? I think that what Rick said is very apropos, because I think the way that we travel in 20 years from today will look fundamentally different from the way that I drove here today.
Well, sticking on that funding theme, so Georgia has significantly expanded its ability to tax local communities through the, it's a mouthful, Transportation Special Purpose Local Option Sales Tax. We all know that as T-SPLOST and its companion SPLOST. So both of these tools give local governments the ability to add a 1 cent tax to tax themselves for a variety of projects. In the T-SPLOST example, funding transportation projects. So do you see any initiatives that would allow local governments and communities with a new and sustainable funding source at the local level? You mentioned the, and remind me what you mentioned, the
marketplace facilitator tax would actually be a revenue stream for the state, not for the locals.
Okay. Anything at the local level that you see as a potential new initiative to allow communities to generate more revenue for projects?
There's nothing that I've heard of being tossed around in that regard. There were some tweaks made to SPLOST recently that allow, essentially, the way that it used to work is once you hit your advertised number of what SPLOST would collect, you had to stop collecting it. This would allow it to go on for the allotted calendar period as opposed to the fixed amount. So I think you'll maybe see people attempting to nip at the edges of those two revenue streams in some capacity, but I haven't heard any talk at the Capitol, at least. And Rick, I'm not sure if you have or not, of any sort of additional revenue streams for locals.
I think you just make sure folks understand, who may be listening, that don't understand what a T-SPLOST is. You know, it's nothing magical or new. I mean, it's really not. I was in a conversation last week with Southwest Georgia Region, who has a regional T-SPLOST. You know, I think there are 9 counties in that group. And 10 years ago, they voted just themselves to tax themselves that extra 1%. And they came up with a big group of projects. And over the past 10 years, they've done probably 95% of them. Now they're up to renewal for another 10 years. The thing I talk about T-SPLOST, and when I talk about other parts of the state, you know, there's a big need in southeast Georgia, in the Pooler, Savannah, Effingham County area, for a tremendous amount of transportation dollars. As you know, like Greg said, there's a post road in every county. Well, that little spot right down there is a multi-billion-dollar issue. But, you know, T-SPLOST, if they had a regional one to help them fund some of the things they do, because it's your tool. You know, I talked to people about it. They said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you as a county or a region, and there are lots of these around the state, you get to decide how you spend your money. You don't have to kind of worry with coming to see GDOT and trying to make your case for a project and get it approved and get the federal dollars, blah, blah, blah. You as a county, you direct your future. And, you know, I think that's the neat thing about it, and I think people need to understand that your elected officials, the commissioners and other city managers and whatever, they get to help decide that, just as you do in your interaction with them. And I think it's a great tool if people like using it, and, but a lot of people do. And it's been very – I have one rural county that I know of that very vast land-wise. In North Georgia, majority of roads are gravel. In 2023, they have their own T-SPLOST. They're pecking away at it. And they're making, they're redoing their old bridges. But the state could have never went in there. It would take them 25 years to do it. But they're on like a 10-year plan, and they'll have, you know, modern bridges, safe bridges, roads that the buses are good on, and the all weather. But they took it on themselves to do that. And I think that's one of those real neat little positive stories people need to think about.
And if I could go back to one thing that you said, the key word I think you said was education. You know, whether it's T-SPLOST, SPLOST, LOST, MOST, you know, there's a variety of different ways to talk about it. They all have the word tax in them.
Sure.
Education, I think, is key, because when people see a tax, they shut down and they say, I'm not going to vote for it. But a little bit of education that it doesn't actually fall 100% on the shoulders of the residents, allows other people coming into the county, coming into the city, to shoulder that burden with them. I think that education is key.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm a use tax guy. I mean, that's why I like the gas tax. I mean, you drive, you pay. You know, and Greg and I and Senator Gooch worked on an electric vehicle taxation bill this year. And, you know, it's all about use. And you use it, you pay it. you join in and take care of the roads that we're all on. And so that's generally how the taxation that I like the best.
Well, and while we're talking about T-Splost, of course, T-Splost failed in Forsyth County, and it lost by 138 votes out of over 100,000 votes cast. Not that I was counting, but it was and it was close, of course, but it still failed. But we still, of course, have some big transportation needs out there, and there's some rules about when we can put T-Splost back on the ballot and how that can work. But in the interim, just to not so much from your role as chairs of the transportation committees, but just elected representatives for Forsyth County who care a great deal about transportation, what would you all like to see happen? I mean, there are there's 10 other post road projects out there that we need, and looking at that and the long term for Forsyth County, what would you all like to see happen? What's your vision of that?
I'll just jump in just real quick. Since I'm new to Forsyth County and what goes on here, mine's limited on some of it. These problems didn't occur quickly. They've been emerging, over time. And, I've been part of Forsyth County since the 60s. My family's had a house here for a long time. And, and it's where people want to live. They've got great schools. I mean, this county has invested in their school system. They've invested in law enforcement so it's safe. They've invested in recreation. Other counties up above and to the northwest and south look at jealousy with that. But along with that comes, heck, everybody else wanting to move, in here. And so those needs aren't going to go away. But what I like to see, like this past year at the Capitol, we were new, and a lot of our delegation is new to the legislature. We got them all together and talked about transportation issues. We had the district engineer from Gainesville and our state folks come in and say, okay, this is how this works. So we can all have a similar focus. We're not charging off on left and right turns, but similar, so that when Greg and I go to the state, to GDOT, the GDOT board or whomever, and say, this is what we need, we're speaking in one voice. And I think that's the beauty where you're at right now in Forsyth County with the county commission, with David and all, they've got that focus. They know what the big projects are, and it makes it a lot easier for us. There's beauty in Forsyth, you have one city, but gosh, some areas have nine cities. Mm-hmm. And so there's a competition, but here we have one, the big county, and having that focus together, something that we've got to work on. I mean, we've got to make sure we maintain that singular focus. But we also need the community to help us and make sure that we understand what they need.
Yeah. Very good. Great.
If I was king for a day, I'd do a few things. And the first one is tongue-in-cheek, but I would rip out every single right turn yield sign that exists in this county. Because we have this proclivity for putting right turn yield signs at every intersection and doing these raised medians. It's crazy. I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but were I king for a day, James, you would never yield on right turns again for the rest of your life. The left turn would yield to you for the rest of your life. I don't think you can look at the T-Splost question in a box. And I would go so far as to say that I think that's probably a mistake that some policymakers, and I would put myself in the policymaker bucket, made, is that we asked for citizens to tax themselves. And we really asked that question without providing any context around what was going to happen with the things that they saw happening around them that were creating the need for the ask for them to tax themselves, right? So we have record property tax increases, which are on an unrealized gain. So nobody's made money on their house, but they're seeing 10, 15, 20, 30% year-over-year increases, and wage growth being eclipsed by inflation. It was almost this perfect storm. And I know the polling data, because I saw it. You showed it to me. Mm-hmm. Every indication said that T-Splost is going to pass like 60-40.
Yeah.
And so the polling data missed something. And I think what the polling data missed was multifold. I think the polling data missed the the real kitchen table anxiety over the nonstop increases in property taxes. And the good news was we addressed that this year with the floating homestead exemption that voters will get to vote on next year. And the school board addressed that this year by doing the largest millage rollback in the history of the county. So the and then on top of that, Governor Kemp and the state legislature passed this $1 billion property tax refund. So the net of that is that for most homeowners in Forsyth County, their property tax bill this year is going to be the same as it was next year. So those increases were negated. I think the other thing, though, that gets lost in these conversations, because nobody really wants to talk about it, is the growth in the county and how we're growing. And my wife and I moved here in, well, I moved here. She grew up here. But we got married in 2007 and bought a house here. And in that amount of time, I want to say the only neighborhoods that I've seen built have been best described as medium to high density. There hasn't been a low density development built in this community probably in 20 years. And when Rick drove here from Pickens County, he drove here through Cherokee County, where he saw a bunch of low density neighborhoods being built. And so we need to ask ourselves the question is, why is that happening in Milton and why is that happening in Cherokee, but why can't it happen in Forsyth? And I think tangential to that as well is the question of impact fees. We know that the county recommendation was to raise the impact fees on new development from $1,900 per single family residential home to $5,500 a couple years ago. That hasn't happened, and that creates about a $10 million a year hole in funding that if you assume that we're gonna build 3,000 new houses a year, which is about the number. And the net of that is that you and I fill that gap. And so I think that if the powers that be were to come to the community and say, okay, we're going to ask you to tax yourselves, but we're also changing the comp plan to radically increase the amount of lower density housing developments that are going to be built, and we're raising the impact fees to the amount that ensures that new development is paying their fair share of the infrastructure so that you're not having to subsidize national home builders to come here and build a couple thousand homes a year. I think that's a different conversation than just, all right, homeowners pony up another $50 million a year, and you know 20% of that's paid for out of county, so it's $40 million more from Forsyth people. I think that's a different conversation. I hope that's the conversation that we can take to the homeowners and the citizens, and I think that they probably would respond differently to that conversation.
And so, in that regard, the idea being that specifically around impact fees, and that is a new revenue stream or an increased revenue stream, but also one that you pay it one time and you're done. Would that, in your view, would that be an addition to would that complement a T-SPLOST that has multi-year sustainability to it?
I think it changes the conversation on the T-SPLOST because it shows that we didn't even have impact fees here until I think 2017. So we missed out. I would need to do the math, but I think we could pretty quickly get to probably $100 million plus number that we have missed out on if we would have been charging the proper amount of impact fees. I was on the impact fee study committee when we implemented them a few years ago. I was appointed to it by Commissioner Levent, and it was a fight to even get what we have. But we haven't had a single increase in it since that, whatever year that was, 16 or 17, even though the code said that we shall increase it every year to keep up with inflation. But I think that the voters are far more sophisticated than I think that we're maybe sometimes tempted to give them credit for. And I think that what they saw was, man, my tax bill's going up and up and up and up. And everywhere I look, there's new houses being built. And I'm not doing this. I'm not doing it this time. It's the first time any local SPLOST or bond has ever failed in Forsyth County. So I think it would be a mistake not to listen to what the voters said in that and kind of reframe the overall plan. And again, they're a sophisticated voter base. We have sophisticated citizens. I think they're willing to invest, but I think they're willing to invest in a plan that for them feels like a rounded effort as opposed to the answer always being to go to the homeowner for the tax.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg. So everybody in the room and everybody listening knows that costs are up. And at Jacobs Engineering, we're experiencing it every day. What we're seeing is, local governments doing a tremendous amount of upfront planning, design, easement acquisition, getting ready for a transportation project, to then open the bids and everything comes back much, much higher, and they're stuck with the difficult decision of maybe shelving the project or going around looking for more money. It's happening every day, and we all know that. So maybe talk about, are there any, if you know, maybe funding reserves at GDOT or at the legislature to kind of help guard against that, so these projects, which have spent a tremendous amount of effort up front, aren't shelved the moment those bids are opened?
We're giggling if you're listening. Because I think we talked about this a moment before we went on air. And what do you do at your own home? You know, that's because I think that's how we operate the state government. It's a simplistic look at it. We do. You know, we have to live within our means. And many times, as you see right now, the lettings by the state on projects are decreased because we have X number of dollars we can spend on the federal and state side, and we're going to do that. You know, we just don't outspend what we do. And so is there a fairy godmother? Sorry, Mr. J. Mm-hmm. No, there's not. Mm-hmm. And I, there's just not. And we'll live within our means. But it's just like the earlier parts of this conversation. We got to make sure that we're doing the right things, and we fund them appropriately, and we get them done that are the most meaningful. And that may mean that some projects don't get funded, but we've got to be very focused in it. And I think GDOT, along with consultants like yourself and others, do that. But I know there's a little bit of discussion out there about taking some of the surplus monies that we do have and being able to do what you're talking about. Debate on the other side is that's looking in the back. We need to be looking forward. That's going to be an interesting conversation at the big, you know, where Greg and I will be sitting in a room with some other folks having that, is which is the best way to go. Mm-hmm. And I don't have enough information yet to really know where I'm stand on it. But I know that projects that are done, paid for, and done, I don't know that need to be refunded. We've got a tremendous backlog of things that need to be done, and we need to be moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know that I have anything to add other than I think that when all the trillions of dollars was being sent to state and local governments and board of educations all around the state and the country, there were some visionaries who were raising the warning flag, and we are now living in the environment that they were warning about, that we have created generational inflation. And you have all these government entities competing for essentially the same workforce, the same skill set, the same materials, the same everything. And so you've just seen prices skyrocket, and there's no sign of it stopping. So the only way that probably will stop is a painful way, via a recession. But even then, so much of that money is sitting in the banks of these government entities that, you know, that it will probably even live through a recession. And we're going to be dealing with this for quite some time, I'm afraid.
And just follow what Greg said, just think about if you're a homeowner. You know, the same steel that builds the bridge that's going over 400 this week is the same steel that builds the Hyundai plant. It's the same steel that does wherever. The gravel that's baked is the 6, 8, 10 inches of gravel base is the same gravel that we use on a road. So it's a funded commodity that is very volatile. We're shocked. I mean, it's really hurt local paving projects. And, you know, that's just something that people always talk about. I talk to Greg and I about this a lot, is paving. You know, paving what $20 million did in a district or $25 million did in a district budget does today, mm-hmm. It's totally different. And people are getting a little frustrated. I mean, that people like me and the senator and other representative senators, because paving's taking so long, but inflation is just killing us, and so it's a hard discussion. It kind of folds back into the things that you and James brought up about money and focus and vision and planning, that we've just got to be good at it.
So we're kind of running a little short on time. I want to close this out with a question, and then we'll talk just a moment about the transportation summit coming up in just a few days. But, you know, we touched a little bit on technology earlier. And this is something that's very important to the chamber. We have been for many years, particularly as it relates to transportation, very invested, going back to talking traffic lights that Scott Evans on our team, you know, led with GDOT. It was the first time GDOT did a hackathon with any sort of private entity. A lot of great stuff came out of that. But when you look at the future, you know, and certainly, you know, we think everybody's concerned about data and how that data gets used, particularly, you know, in a public setting. But there's also a lot of really important data that can help us save some money, help with efficiency, and that sort of thing. When you take a look at the future of transportation, certainly how we use transportation, Senator, as you had indicated, is going to change, but also access to all this incredible amount of data can being used to manage transportation. Where do you see that heading? You know, is that something that, that y'all are talking about in committees? Is it something that we're investing in Georgia? Do we want to invest in it in Georgia?
In the year that I've been the chairman and been on the committee, we've not spent a lot of time discussing that. I think that the, I think what you're going to see, though, is the private sector lead on this. You know, when we have level five autonomous vehicles at scale, I think, again, you're going to fundamentally change the capacity of the roadways because the ability for the cars to talk to each other, essentially, using AI. And by talking to each other, I don't mean communicating with each other, but I mean detecting where they are, detecting what the speed is, detecting how close other vehicles are, and using that to move vehicles in a more efficient manner without the need for human intervention. I think that's going to fundamentally shift things a good bit. So these are things that people like Elon Musk and his team will figure out for us and will innovate for us. I don't necessarily think is the role of the government and the state to innovate. It probably is the role of the government and not probably, it is the role of the government and the state to create the level playing field by which they have the ability to compete and the best man or woman wins. And I think that we're going to see with just the computer processing speeds that are now available in the autonomous vehicle world, I think that's probably gonna be the first thing that we see. And then this concept of vertical flight and manned and then eventually unmanned aircraft driving us places at scale at low cost is a game changer. And I don't think that we can look past how significant of a game changer that is.
And James, I'll throw in real quick. There's just so much road widening that can occur.
Yeah.
There's just so much. And if we talk, I'm so excited about the project that you, Scott, GDOT is working to use artificial intelligence, to use the technologies out there to move people, as Greg said, effectively throughout the area. It is, to me, the best cost use if we can use some of that to buy us time even, to make sure that we buy time to be able to then ride and widen a road or change an interchange or whatever. But this technology is just thrilling. That what I've seen and what I've seen it could do, and as the I've met as Greg has with the autonomous people, but also just the autonomous vehicles that are going to be used in communities for shopping, to just reduce the road use around a shopping center, to get in an autonomous vehicle to go from one store to over here to over there to a restaurant. That's coming, and it is exciting to see. And you know, you brought up some little thing, you know, referee some of this is going to be the hardest thing that the senator and I are going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, it's a competitive world. We want the competition. We want the innovation that's out there, but there's some refereeing as far as public use comes into demand. You know, like I was in a pretty heated conversation yesterday over bus rapid transit and its ability to take over state highways and use them. And I'm kind of very apprehensive about that because, you know, it's reduce lanes that we have are out there. So there's going to be some interesting policy things that that are going to come down the line.
Very good. Very good. I know I don't envy you and the positions you hold. Thank you. I have two parents that both served in public office in the past, and we have a saying in our family, and it is a dirty, thankless business. So on behalf of a grateful community, thank you. I know you'll both work extremely, extremely hard, and thank you for making some time for us this afternoon. So I just want to remind everybody that The Forsyth County Transportation Summit is on October 31st. It'll be a fun way to kick off your Halloween that morning, 7:30 a.m. at Astro Celebration Event Center on Windermere Parkway. Both Senator Dolezal and Representative Jaspers will be a central part of that program. We'll also be joined by Commissioner of the Georgia Department of Transportation, Russell McMurray, will be with us, as well as Board of Commissioners Chairman Alfred John and County Manager David McKee. We've got a few other guests that will be there who are transportation and economic development experts, and will be a great part of the program. The presenting sponsor of the summit is Martin Marietta Materials, and a special thanks to Jason and Jacobs Engineering for being a major sponsor of the summit as our digital marketing sponsor. Jason, can you talk a little bit about the summit, what it's all about, and what we're going to accomplish there?
Sure. Jacobs Engineering is excited to be a digital sponsor this year. Myself and several of our colleagues will be there, and we're excited to participate in an open discussion about future transportation in Forsyth County. We plan to dig into some key projects and what the future looks like for these projects. So we're going to explore the transportation issues more broadly in Georgia and how those issues impact Forsyth County and the region. The summit is open to everybody in Forsyth County. It's going to be shared live on social media and on Forsyth County local government channels and rebroadcasted in the weeks to come. There's a lot of interest. We expect this to sell out. And if you want to participate, you can register at focotransportationsummit.com.
Very good, Senator. Representative, thank you both for joining us. We look forward to continuing the conversation at the Transportation Summit on October 31st at 7 a.m. At Astro Celebration Event Center. Jason Bodwell, thank you for flying the microphones with me today. It was great, and hope to have you back as a co-sponsor soon talking about this incredibly important topic. Thank you all very much.